setting you up to win. You know, as we were singing, as we were declaring that truth, this is how I fight. I just felt God whisper to my spirit. He said, tell them I'm setting them up to win. You know, sometimes it doesn't feel like we're winning. But I'm not talking about a feeling. I'm talking about the absolute truth of God that transcends your situation, that transcends your mood, which if you're anything like me, like it's, you know, a second a minute. I'm just telling you, it transcends all that. And I just felt like the Lord said, you want to know how it may look like you're surrounded, but I'm surrounded and you're surrounded by the love of God. And He's setting you up to win. I honestly, when we started discussing this series about truth on trial, I kind of had like that naughty kid in me kind of bubble to the surface. You might not know it to look at me, just, you know, hold back. But when I was at school, my enthusiasm would get me into trouble. Okay, and so literally on every report I've ever got from school, and I've got them all, in some form or another, it says Siobhan's very enthusiastic, and it has all kinds of connotations with it. It's like, she's got lots to say. Like, I wish she wouldn't, but like, she's very enthusiastic. You know, it's that kind of like, you know, like backhanded compliment. But I would have this kind of thing. I would be the kid who'd go, but why? But why? But why? And the teacher's going, just because. Like, I'm trying to teach. Will you be quiet? But I had this thing of, but I want to know why. And so when we started this series about truth on trial, I kind of had this thing bubble up inside me. And I went, Lord, can I kind of ask you some things? Because there's some things I'm confused about. And I love you. And I know you're the God of clarity. You are not the author of confusion, but I'm confused about some stuff. And I wonder if I could ask you a question about freedom. Because sometimes I don't feel very free. And I don't know where this will find you today. I don't know if you hear my voice and have your own wrestle because you don't feel like you're free. You feel like you're surrounded, and it doesn't feel like you're winning. Now, you might be here today and think, Siobhan, that's not me at all. I feel like I'm winning. I know I'm surrounded by His love. And if that's you, I want you to put whatever you hear today, and I want you to put it in your heart and in your spirit, because one day you're going to visit someone who feels like they're in a prison cell, who feels like they're in jail, and they have a visitor coming to them. And you might not know what to say. And I want to give you a truth that will be a key to their freedom. And so whether you hear this for yourself, I pray by the end of today, chains will fall off, doors will open, the foundation of your troubles will shake, that you will walk out of here with an increased measure of freedom. And if it's not you, I pray that you would store the wisdom of God up in your heart for the time that you sit with someone behind bars and you say, I have a truth for you that may just set you free. So I'm passionate about what I'm about to share, because if I'm honest with you, the reason I have confusion about freedom is because it is something I have wrestled with. I know what He says. But the absolute truth is that He is my healer. The absolute truth is that I am free, that I'm a child of God. That's the absolute truth. But there are days when I look around me and my current reality doesn't match up with the absolute truth. I wanted to ask a question. Lord, hear my heart. What is the truth about freedom? I felt like God whispered something back. He said, freedom, sweetheart, hinges on the truth you know. What is the truth about freedom? Freedom hinges on the truth, you know. You know, in week one, Steve Matthews did an incredible job about speaking about the truth being the person of Jesus. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And so if you've not heard that message, my conversation with you today sits on that basis, so I encourage you to listen to that podcast. But I'm a romantic at heart, and I'm an eternal optimist. And I felt like the Lord went to say, have you ever played a game called Truth, Truth, and a Lie? Is it like truth and a lie? Yeah, well, not dare, lie, okay? But I want to play a game today called Truth, Truth, and a Lie. I believe there's some truths about freedom that I want to share, but there is a lie. There is a lie that you have come to believe as truth. And because you have believed a lie, it has you stuck. And hear my heart, as someone who has felt stuck, as someone who has felt behind those bars and asked, Lord, what does your freedom look like for me? My heart became free when the revelation of the lie was revealed. And so I pray for each one of you, if there is a lie that you have believed to be true, that God would reveal it to you. But the truth about freedom is that it hinges on the truth we know. In John 8, 31, 32, it says this. Jesus said to them, you are truly my disciples if you live as I tell you to. And you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Who wants to be set free this morning? Come on, I see a hand raised. Do you know what? I remember once doing that. In fact, Dave, I don't know if you remember, but we were standing years ago, and I remember Dave said that for someone, we were in the midst of prayer, this is going to happen really quickly. And I remember tangibly reaching up my hand and grabbing something. I couldn't see it, but I grabbed something, and in that year, I got an incredible breakthrough in my health. So for that girl who raised your hand, God sees your response, because this is about a response to an invitation. I'm asking God, what is the truth about freedom? Your freedom hinges on the truth you know. Jesus is the truth. Do you know him? Do you know him? You know, I did a little bit of study about freedom. Freedom can kind of be, the essence of freedom can be encapsulated in two things. And it is not the hills are alive with the sound of music. Can I just tell you, inside my head, if I was a little bit more like, don't you? I'd be like, skipping, like in my head, when I think about freedom, the reality is I have this very romantic, childlike thought of freedom, you know, and I'm singing, you know, I can't sing, but you know, I'm singing Day a Deal, whatever it is, you know, and I'm skipping around and I'm part of the Von Trapp family and this is freedom. If that's your idea of freedom, no wonder it eludes you. No wonder you don't feel it. No wonder you can't find it. Because it is not about the hills being alive with the sound of music. That is not freedom. Freedom is about liberty. Liberty, by the way, is justified and redeemed. That's what liberty is. You are justified. That means that you were once enslaved, and Christ, with his freedom, bought your freedom. He paid a price that you could not pay, because it required no sin. And so he made an atonement for you. That means he made an amends for you. And he paid with his life for your freedom, so that you could have liberty, so that you could be justified and redeemed. That is the very essence of freedom. And your knowledge of the truth, of understanding that you are justified, understanding that you are redeemed, gives you freedom. It doesn't make you sing in the top of the hills. It gives you the real, tangible freedom. Do you know, it's funny, but the true essence of freedom, if you look it up, is to do with liberty and citizenship. I don't know if you've ever heard that some cities sometimes give people who've done things of worthy, of worth, that they say, you have the freedom of the city. That means that even though you're not a citizen of this country, or you're a citizen of this city, you have access. You have access to certain things because you have freedom of movement. We see you as a citizen of this town. And so you have certain rights and certain accesses because you've been given citizenship. When you have the freedom of Christ, when you know Jesus, when you follow his way, when he leads you into all truth, he doesn't zap truth to you. Because experience gives you a context for that freedom to be grounded in. And so when we come into this liberty, when we come into the knowledge that I am justified and I'm redeemed and I am a citizen of heaven, then I have access to things that only the citizen of heaven have access to. I want to tell you today, if you've accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior, you are a citizen of heaven and you have access to justice. You have access to mercy. You have access to grace. And if you're here and you said, I haven't decided to follow Jesus yet, you're going to get an opportunity to do that. Because this is not an exclusive club. We're out to hear and spread the good news to all who will listen. There is freedom, and it is available to you. You know, justice, by the way, is getting what you deserve. Mercy is not getting what you deserve. And grace is getting something you don't deserve, an unearned, undeserved favor of God. We get confused with those things, but when we are a citizen in heaven, we have access to justice. He goes and defends us. He's setting us up to win. We have access to mercy, his forgiveness. We have access to grace, his blessing and favor. So I wanted to look at what is the lie about freedom. If the truth about freedom is that it hinges on the knowledge of truth, what's the lie? Now, I'm sure there's several nuances in this, but I believe that there are two major lies that we have come to believe is true that are currently holding you captive. Now, I don't know what your captivity looks like. It may be poor health. It may be a mental illness. It may be a relationship. You don't want out the relationship, but you want to stop having this very, harmful dynamic that you have in a relationship. It might be that you're in a job and as hard as you work, you just can't seem to get a promotion or break the ceiling on you. I don't know if it's that you feel isolated and alone. I don't know what it is that the thing that you don't feel like you have freedom in. But hear me when I say, as someone who has wrestled with freedom, and I don't say this lightly, I believe the two major lies that we have come to believe true, and I'm calling them out today, is that I am powerless to choose. I am powerless to choose. In Deuteronomy 30:19, it says, I have set before you life and death. Choose life. In Luke 10:19, it says, I have given you the authority or the power over the enemy. So it says in his word, and we believe that's the truth of God, that I have the power to choose life or death. That I have the authority and the power given to me by Jesus Christ as a citizen of heaven to choose life or death. And Lord says, choose life, oh, that you may live. And I know that's hard because some things are a consequence of what we do and other things happen to us. And so you might be looking like, you don't know how sick I am. You know, several years ago, I came home with a heart virus that weakened the walls of my heart, and I sat opposite a doctor who said, you'll never make it into your 40s because you're prone to sudden death. And you know what? I was clearing out from my room today, and I found all the medication that I used to take. Now, I still have episodes from time to time, as my core team can testify, when I'm at the back of the car going, oh, my gosh, should we take you to A&E? And I'm like, it's fine. Because I still have a choice in the midst of sickness. I still have a choice to choose life. And so as my chest hurts, I pray, God, this body belongs to you. I pray for mercy and for grace. I believe that you are my healer, my redeemer. For you live, I live in you. In my weakness, your strength is made perfect. Even in the midst, I get to choose. You know what? You might be suffering with mental health issues and difficulties. You have a choice. You have a choice to shower. And I know that might not sound like a big deal, but it is. We should celebrate the small, because that act of defiance, that I'm going to shower, that I'm going to go walk the dog, that I'm going to eat well, is an act of defiance to say, I am His and I will be free. The reason I asked him to play is because I don't know what you're filling your cell with. I've got to say, I'm going to want you here because it's like great. But you know what? The reason it lifts me is because there's a sound that's supporting. There's a sound, and it says in His word that He sings over you. There's a sound. He says, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. I am with you. In that tough relationship, I'm with you. In that dead-end job that doesn't seem to go anywhere, I'm with you. Take this sound with you. So I believe the lie that we have believed is that I am powerless to choose. I can choose. I ask you today to think about, for you and where you are, what does choosing life look like? I also think, in a world that is free from, I don't know if you've ever gone to the, and I'm not knocking it, by the way, because, you know, our food's been produced in all kinds of ways, and so I do buy some free from products, but it's free from gluten, and it's free from dairy, and free from, you know, artificial colors, and it's like free from all kinds of things. But I think we have taken our attitude from a free from food to a life, and we believe that freedom means I should be free from pain, free from suffering, free from hardship. And I think some of us are really disappointed with God because we think He's broken a promise. But He never promised you we would be free from. He never did. In fact, if we go back to His word, it says in John 16:33, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. What has He told us? In this world, you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. Some of you are so disappointed with God because you think He broke a promise. He did not promise you it would be free from. But He did promise you, you are free to. You are free to choose. You are free to worship. You are free to be giving. You're free to be generous. You are free. I can choose. Stop letting the enemy silence your voice and take away your choice. People have died and fought so that you would have the right and to openly choose. So the truth about freedom, the truth about freedom is that it hinges on the truth you know. The lie about freedom is that you have no authority to choose. The lie about freedom is that it should be free from instead of free to. So what is the truth about my pain? 2 Corinthians, I have never read this verse in this translation before. And the dog is my witness, did like a little dance in the kitchen. I was like, are you kidding? This is amazing. So I'm going to read it to you. It's 2 Corinthians 12:8-10. Let this be like the sound of freedom to you. Paul's writing, he says, 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to relieve me of this. But he answered me, my grace is always, not sometimes, always, more than enough for you, more than enough. And my power finds its full expression through your weakness. So I will celebrate my weakness. For when I'm weak, I sense more deeply the mighty power of Christ living in me. So I'm not defeated by weakness, but I'm delighted. For when I feel my weakness and I endure mistreatment, when I'm surrounded by troubles on every side and face persecution, because of my love for you, Christ, I am made yet stronger. For my weakness becomes a portal to God's power. And that's literally when I read that. I was like, woohoo! Like, are you kidding? My weakness, beat me up, Scotty. I'm just telling you, my weakness is a portal to God's power. Stop hiding your scars. Stop being quiet in the darkness. Your weakness is a portal to God's power. I will boast all the more about this. Not because of who I am, because of who he is, and his strength is made perfect. Oh, dear Lord. I just fell in love with Jesus all over again when I read that. I was like, oh, Lord. I was like, so what is the truth about my pain? That even here, I can choose life. That here in the midst, I can choose life and I am free to celebrate the small. But, I know that you can hear a message like this and then on Monday morning, you get out of bed and that back pain's still there. Or, you know, sometimes during the week, you'll get that phone call that you're dreading. I don't propose to believe that this is like a tick. But what I want to do is equip you with a sound that fills your cell, with a sound that you're not defied by your situation, but you exercise the liberty that Jesus gave his life for, and you speak life into that darkness. So I wrote four things that I would consider to be devotion in the midst. I believe that when you're in the midst, and I would say if you're not in the midst of something, write these down. Because there will be one day where you're visiting somebody who needs to know what do they do in the midst when I know the absolute truth, but my current reality, there's a bit of a gap. And I believe this devotion stands in the gap. It is a spirit, it is a heart that confesses. So the four things, if we can have them up, is devotion in the midst. Confess, thank, declare, and listen. Confess. Confess your belief and your doubt. You know, there's a great story in Acts 16, if you want to read about it, where a father, you know, brings his sick son and they've been struggling for some time. And he says, Lord, if you're willing, and God says, if I'm willing, all things are possible for those who believe. And he says, okay, take my belief and my unbelief. Can I just tell you, that has become the smartest prayer thing I have, and I pray that all the time, because I don't want to hide from God, because your disappointment can be like a glass wall. You can still see God, but you can't access the intimacy you so desire. We were praying as a team, and I felt like God just whispered to me, and he said, Siobhan, if you don't deal with your disappointment, you are going to miss your appointment. And God wants us to throw all these things aside and confess. Confess your belief. Confess your doubt. Bring to him your disappointment. And then thank him. Thank him, because your gratitude will change your altitude. I'm just telling you, your gratitude will change your altitude. Confess your doubt. Bring your belief. Thank him for the little, because it grows a spirit of gratitude. Thank him for who he is. And then declare. Declare heaven's perspective. You know, Ben was preaching last week about truth as a different perspective. And I was like, oh, he's going to preach my message. Like, it became so close to what I wanted to say. But I want to echo what Ben said about truth brings a different perspective. You know, I'm running out of time. But I looked at the life of Joseph, and it kind of felt like a roller coaster. And so I had this picture, if we can just have this picture up of the roller coaster. And I kind of felt like this is what life's like. So if you kind of put your own life in there, sometimes I can feel like this. So Joseph, if you read about it in Genesis, it starts at a bit of a low. Unfortunately, his mom dies just before he's 17. And then he has a bit of a high because he's his dad's favorite son. He just loves him, gives him a beautiful coat. God tells him, you know, these beautiful dreams. And in one of these dreams, you know, he's going to have authority and his whole family are going to bow down to him. And he's like 17, you know, come on, I'm just telling you, anybody knows 17-year-old boy. So he has this major moment. Everything's fantastic. You know, he's wearing this flat coat. He's walking around. And then his brothers have enough and they chuck him in a pit and they actually sell him into slavery. It's a bit of a low. Then he goes into a house that's actually the captain of the guard for the Pharaoh. And it says the Lord was with him and he had favor. And then he manages everything of the Pharaoh's, of the captain's house. And then the captain's wife takes a fancy to him. And isn't it funny that before his dad gave him a coat to signify the promise, and here she is, and she grabs his coat, and he flees, leaving his coat. And she goes and tells a lie to the officer and says, look what he's done in your house. And then guess what? He's back in prison again. He's back in prison. But the Lord was with him, and it says he had favor. And then he was the manager of all the prisoners. And then, so he's like up, down, up, down. Then he has these dreams and there's a cupbearer and a baker. And he says to them, like, they both have dreams. It's not so great for the, I don't want to spoiler alert if you read it. You know, it's not great for the baker. I'm just saying you don't want the dream that the baker had. He's like, you're going to die. Like, okay, no one wants that dream. And then the cupbearer, he says, no, go back to the king. This is what it means. Don't forget me. But he forgets. And he stays in prison for another 2 years. Up, down, up, down. And then it comes to pass that the Pharaoh has a dream and the cupbearer remembers. I know a guy. So he comes before the king and he gives him the interpretation of his dream. And then all of a sudden he's saving a nation from famine and his family are saved and come and get the food. And guess what? They bow before him. But if you were me, I'd kind of feel like I'd be like, I'm one step forward, two steps back. Like, world, what am I doing wrong? I'm up, I'm down. If you were his friend, you'd be going, I feel like you're being attacked. Some of your attacks are God setting you up. I don't believe he's the author of it, but he allows things. You know, if you go to the gym, you need resistance to build strength. Not all resistance is against you. He is setting you up. You don't see many farms on the tops of mountains. Most farms are in the valley because that's where things grow. I wonder, you know, I was listening to Nelson Mandela's story. His story was very similar to the up and down. You know, he was the first guy in his family to go to school. His teacher actually gave him the name Nelson. And then he was like the first guy in school in his family. Then he went to university. That was great. He was expelled from university because he went on strike. Then he was the first person to found the ANC Youth League, and everything was great, and he got married. And then sadly, tragically, his daughter died at 9 months, and he was sent to prison for 5 years. Then he was out, and he was the first guy to open a black solicitor firm in South Africa. Things were great. Then he was back in prison again for 27 years with a vision on his heart. And I say this as someone who was born and brought up in South Africa, that this racism that had now been put in legislation, he saw a different way. And he spoke about it from a little cell for 27 years. And at the age of 75, not only did he vote for the first time, but he voted in an election where he became the president. I mean, that is pretty phenomenal. I don't know what your life looks like, but what you choose to do in the midst is so important. Would you declare the goodness of God? Would you declare his promises? Regardless of what it looks like, some of you are sitting here and you might be 75. I wonder what I would think at 75. I'd probably be thinking, well, maybe it was for the next generation. Maybe it wasn't for me. At 75, he became president. He won the Nobel Peace Prize. What if you filled your cell with the sound of God's promises, declaring his freedom, celebrating the liberty that you are a child of God, and that as a citizen of heaven, I have full access to justice, to mercy, to grace, devotion in the midst of your pain. Looks like confessing both your doubt and your belief, giving thanks, declaring his truth, and then listening. Listening to the voice of God. Adopt a posture of waiting. That doesn't mean you don't do anything, because like Joseph, he activated his gift in the cell. He activated his gift in the cell. He served in the midst. I don't know what you need to activate. There's another story where Paul was in prison and he starts to sing and he starts to praise. That's why this devotion for me, if you think about your confession, confess who he is. Give thanks for who he is. Fill your situation with the sound of thanksgiving, with an offering of praise, declaring his goodness. Stop looking at your situation. If Nelson Mandela had done that, he would not have released a book called The Long Walk to Freedom. And I wonder how much he knew when he wrote that title. Because we are journeyed into the fullness of truth. And as we know the truth sets us free. The time's gonna, now we're gonna pray and I'm gonna ask you to stand, but I don't wanna leave you with a message like this and not knowing what your next steps are. And I've got some great books that have helped me when I've felt things were a bit difficult and I wanted to know what does the light look like. And so Craig Rochelle wrote a great book called Hope in the Dark. I have read this, it's incredible. In fact, the whole farm analogy and the gym analogy comes from that, and that was incredible. Because prayer is so important, because it says your prayer is powerful and produces fruit. And in fact, a friend of mine just came and said to me, Siobhan, do you remember when you prayed with me some months ago? She's been looking to have friends and to have in a relationship, and God cares about these things. And 5 years she's been asking that, and we prayed, and she shared to me that she's actually met a great man of God because prayer is powerful and he cares and he catches every tear. So this is a great book. It's How to Pray by Pete Gregg. That is a great book, How to Pray. I want to encourage you to do that. And if you're struggling with any kind of addiction, whether it be to pornography or alcohol or even just a thought pattern, anything like that, Atomic Habits by James Clear is really helpful. These are practical things, because what you do in the midst is important. Ask for help. Reach out. Use your voice. Praise. Let hope fill the thing that you're sitting in. Because this is how we fight our battles. It may look like we're surrounded, but we are actually surrounded by the love of God. And I'm going to ask you to stand as we come to a close. We're going to pray.